Hey, this is John. Standard warning for people who are in the car with their kids. There's some swearing in this episode. Hello and welcome. My name is John August.
My name is Craig Mason.
And you're listening to Script Notes, episode 721, a podcast about screenwriting and things that are interesting to screenwriters. So let's say you have finished writing that script that only you could write and perhaps only you could direct. But how do you learn how to direct? Today on the show, we'll talk with the writer, director, and star of the much-acclaimed film Sorry Baby about their journey behind the lens, which landed them Best Directorial Debut by the National Board of Review and a lot of other awards attention. Welcome to Script Notes, Ava Victor.
Oh, thank you for having me. You know what? You guys have gotten me through some interesting, difficult days, and I really, your voices are very comforting to me. So it's interesting to see your faces.
Weird, huh?
Totally attribute faces to voices, and it's a very surreal moment. So thank you for this. I'm excited to be here.
It's great having you, and I'm sorry if we are disturbing you, if the cognitive dissonance is freaking you out.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for saying that, yeah.
Yeah, I want you to feel okay about this, but you might not. And I get that. I remember the first time when I was a kid, I would listen to Howard Stern on the radio. I had no idea what Howard Stern looked like. And then they started putting up ads for Howard Stern, like, you know, around like the subways and stuff. And I was like, what? Well,
that's like a particularly surprising one.
Yeah, that was really shocking. Well, Ava, I have a little bit of like, okay, you were comforting me too, because even though I don't spend a lot of time being cool and looking at things that other people are looking at, for some reason, back when you were doing videos, I guess on YouTube, but maybe there was something else, I saw you did one where you're talking to your imaginary or potentially real off-screen boyfriend, babe, about the heterosexual pride parade. And that sent me, and I loved it so much, and it sent me down a whole rabbit hole of all of your videos, and I just thought you were hysterical. Like, so funny. I have to say, not surprised at all that somebody as funny as you has made a movie like this, because I think funny people are better at drama than drama people.
You know what? That is so cool. The journey of the year has been accepting that I did make videos in the past. I think I was...
They're awesome.
Like, at that moment, it felt really right for that to be what I was talking about. And like, looking back, I'm like, well, that day, that video made sense, but now it's like random, but also have to kind of give it up for whatever journey your journey is. It's your journey, and like, that's okay. So
tell me about it.
I've come to terms with the fact that there were skills built there. One of the main ones is like moving through humiliation and like putting yourself out there and feeling devastated by yourself to make something happen. And the pain of not doing something is greater than the pain of doing something and feeling ashamed.
Sure. Well, that's what we do. And I like the way you phrase that. The pain of not doing things is worse than the pain of doing them. But the point is pain. So welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, pain.
I wanted to save talking about short form video to the bonus segment, because we had Quinta Brunson on the show and she came up out of BuzzFeed and you were doing Comedy Central and stuff, and she learned so many crucial skills there. So I want to talk about what skills transfer and what skills don't transfer and sort of what you learn from that. But before we get to that, we're obviously going to talk about your film. I also want to answer some listener questions on talking to actors, writing exercises, when to share the script with people. And I also want to confess that the poster for your film is great. It's you holding a cat. And so I assumed for months before I watched the film that, like, oh, the baby is the cat, that she's talking to the cat.
Yeah.
And the spoiler is that it's not about the cat. It's not about the cat. The cat is a small part of the movie, the adorable part of the movie, but not a large part of the movie.
I know. And, you know, the poster conversation was very, it was one of the like more intense parts of making, because I went in this huge circle and it was, the main issue was trying to communicate a tonal movement through an image, and all the images that I was compelled by were like sentimental value. I was like, oh my God, like that's the best version of a dramatic poster. And that's what, if we had made a drama, simply a drama, it should have been like, it was interesting after having worked on posters to be like, this is the best image for the film. That said, it is deceptive. And then I got a lot of feedback that people were like, I can't watch because the cat dies. And I was like, oh my God, No.
No, again, another spoiler. The cat does not die. The cat thrives in the film.
That's like the only thing that does okay.
The cat starts sort of healthy and just gets healthier.
No, it grows up. It's perfect. It's a perfect cat.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So there's another famous screenwriting book called Save the Cat, which apparently your film follows. But we have our own script notes book that's out there in the world. And we have two little bits of follow-up on that before we get into the meat of the episode.
Well, look.
What? Wait, what? Oh, my God. There
it is.
Oh, my
gosh. She's got it in front of her. Oh, my God. Incredible.
Because you know what? I really need it. I heard about you. And I'm like a little bit through it, but I have to pause because it called me out a little too much and I need to recuperate.
Not by name, but just by implication.
Ava, you are a bad writer in it. And I was like,
oh, my God. Yeah, we almost took that one out. It almost dropped in the line edits. But you know what?
We figured it would be motivating. So, John, what are we... Oh. We have some follow-up from Liz.
Yeah, so Drew has the flu, so he's on the call, but he's a rough voice. Craig, do you want to be Liz in the Script Notes book?
Sure, I'll be Liz. So Liz writes, I bought the Script Notes book for my husband Nick, a longtime listener, for Christmas. I'm an author, and through a series of unexpected events, ended up in a pitch meeting for a script this week, my very first time pitching a script. My husband suggested I read the pitching chapter in the book. I did. And the advice in there was such a huge help. The meeting was a big success. So thank you so much for writing this book. That is so nice. It's almost too nice.
Like, yeah, it's really nice.
Tell me the meat. Like, where's the sad part? Like,
there's no conflict.
Uh-uh.
Where's the underdog? Like, geez, Brad, must be nice. Like,
right. Like, you got, I mean, I kept waiting for my husband. Once I heard my husband suggest it, I thought, oh, this is going to lead to we're getting a divorce, but...
Story-wise, interesting, yeah.
Unfortunately for us, Liz's life is nearly perfect.
All right, Liz, I'm so happy for you, but you are incredibly unrelatable, but congratulations.
Liz and her perfect husband, Nick. Well, thank you. I mean, it is very nice. I'm glad. Listen, that was the point, Liz, was that we would help people. And so it's nice to see that it's working in the world.
You know, the paper is good paper for a book that's more, because it's very like paper. It's not glossy. Mm-hmm. Gives the energy of more of a manual that you can like look to where you need to. And that to me, like the paper makes the stakes approachable to, like it makes the book approachable to me. And I feel like that was very thoughtful. And Orange is amazing. So you guys nailed it with that.
Well, thank you.
I mean, the content of the book is amazing too, but also the look and the feel is really powerful.
All right, so that is a review from Ava Victor, an acclaimed filmmaker. A lot of people have been leaving reviews online, which is great also because it helps people find the book. So thank you for leaving on Amazon or Goodreads. And I want to single out one reader who gave us only 4 stars. Fine, you can give us 4 stars.
That's good. It's 4 out of 5. That's great.
Yeah, but like most people are 5 stars. Like if 4, it pulls down our average when someone gives us 4 stars rather than 5 stars, which is fine. But this man wrote 2,105 words on the Script Notes book. And I'll put a link in the show notes to it so people can read through it because it's really impressively written. So it's a guy, Dimitri Papadimitropoulos.
His name is 2,105 words.
It's incredible. But what I liked so much about his review, he says, the book's generosity is not that it is kind, though it often is, but that it treats the reader as an adult, someone who can tolerate complexity, contradiction, and the unglamorous truth that artistry is frequently indistinguishable from persistence.
That's and, a 5-star review to me. I don't know where that
feels like it's a 6-star, and he might have tried to go to 6, but
he broke.
It just busted him down to 4.
That's all right.
That's common. That's common.
Ava, I thought that was a good jumping off point to talk about artistry frequently is indistinguishable from persistence, because that is sort of the thing about filmmaking is that like, you say like, oh my God, that was an amazing movie. And I was like, yeah, but it wasn't just brilliant because it was brilliant, because the person had this great idea. It was like so much hard work day after day, year after year to get things done. And I think it's a thing we talk about a lot on the show, but as I went through my career and as I've met some and worked with some great directors, it's just been always such a revelation. It's like, oh, you're just working really, really hard.
Yeah.
And I think it's a thing that's just underappreciated. And especially as we get into sometimes award seasons, and you think, oh my God, this is the person's a genius, that person's a genius. Like, no, they're just working really hard. And like, there's luck and there's all these things. So there is talent. But it's all these things. And so I want to maybe frame some of our conversation with you around this, because you came up, you have some experience, but as I'm reading through the press notes on this, you wrote the script not even necessarily intending to direct it. So can you talk us through the journey to this is a script and now this is a script that I'm going to try to direct?
Yes, totally. I mean, I think that theme is very relevant for me. I feel like there was a moment that I realized my career would never be made by somebody else. Like it picked me up out of oblivion and gave me like an amazing role that, you know, was like the big role for my, like, I just, there was this realization of like, you are the one who has to get you where you want to go. And I have always been like, well, I'm not going to fail because I don't work hard. I'm going to fail because I'm missing some like intrinsic quality that people have. But I was like, it's never going to be because I don't put in the hours. And so that discipline has kept me from, I think, like mentally losing my mind. It's like, well, what can I control? I can write more. I can, I can study. I can watch films. I can, you know, get my day job to a place where I'm making enough so I have these hours. You know, like I, you know, I had a development deal with the studio that happened because of my internet videos. And that was a very difficult experience because I was turning in like page one drafts for honestly years, thinking that if I just wrote the perfect draft, like then I would get sort of the momentum and attention from the I needed to make that film happen. But that didn't come. And that made me lose my goddamn mind. It made me really internalize something about I am fraudulent, I can't do this, I'm not meant to write. And then I wrote scripts for a sort of body horror thing that didn't make sense, but it had a lot of heart. And I sent that around to people through my agents at the time. And my rejections were very impersonal no's. And the one person I'd met before I sent this script to read it and said no, but the rejection letter meant everything, was Costell Barry Jenkins Company. And when I met Barry, he was like, your videos, which I was even at that point kind of ashamed of, or like had or whatever, he was like, it's filmmaking. It's just not the way that other people do it. And it's a small version, but you are directing this. You're making decisions about how people look, where the camera's going, and what people are saying. And I think that gave me this sort of optimism, or like, oh man, like someone sees the hard work behind these. And then when I sent them the script, they said a very generous no, and made this really beautiful letter about the script and what was valuable about it emotionally, and then why they weren't the right partners for it. That was weirdly like a letter that I read and cried out of like, oh, but there are people out there who are understanding. And then I had been, over the course of, you know, 5 years or so, been stewing on the idea for Sorry Baby, but was sort of like, man, the words, if I start writing them down too soon just for this particular project, they're gonna, I'm gonna get too depressed about how bad it is compared to what the story means to me. So it took me a really long time to piece together this, the writing of it. But then finally I sat myself down in a cabin in Maine and was like, it's time, you're writing this.
Yeah.
And I wrote it and sent it to Costell again, because I was like, they get me. And they were like, okay, what do you dream of for this? And I was like, well, I'm going to act in it, ... hoping that...
But I want to clarify, at this point, you are an actor who's been cast in things independently, because you have acting credits. And yeah, so it's not crazy to think that you're going to be acting.
Right. It's not crazy, but it's a different thing.
Yeah.
You know? Well, yeah, but there's that, you know, concern that, oh, well, if we had Jennifer Lawrence, then maybe we would get the blah, blah, blah. And, and you're like, no, it's going to be me.
It was very clear that like, when I'm the lead actor, that means that the film is this big, you know?
And this big.
Yeah.
Like I was like, I'm willing to sacrifice whatever, you know, thing that is.
Ava, can I ask you about the script that you sent to Costell? Because does it closely resemble the movie that actually is made? Because the footprint of the film is very small. Like it is it's a cabin in the woods. And while the times are shifting around it, the actual literal geography it's inhabiting is very, very small. And was it always that way?
Yes, it was always that small. And it's very, very similar to the script that we shot. There are some changes. Mainly, I did a little work with Costell around the character of Liddy. And then once we got Nate, there was like that kind of opened it up for me of like how this person talks. And there were a couple of things that, just a few scenes that like we adjusted the dialogue. But it was, you know, and I have not had this since, and I don't know if I will, how little we had to work on the script.
Well, so.
What do you think?
You you worked on this. I think you worked on the script a lot.
Yeah.
I think that what people sometimes think is that all the work on the script happens after the quote unquote first draft, which is never really a first draft. I mean, some people do write first drafts, but a lot of people hand a script over that they have been, I mean, you've been thinking about it for years. And then you, when you went to your Stephen King cabin, what came out was something that was already thought through. There was an enormous amount of intention and structure and care and thought, I suspect, having seen the movie and having seen the way you directed it, that you had already directed the movie in your head. You saw it. You saw it, you heard it, you felt it, you smelled it. It's all there. So it's okay for that work to happen earlier. I think it's the best thing. I think it makes, I think it's why people say yes.
Yeah.
There's a certain kind of movie that you can write that's about like, oh my God, the aliens are crashing to the moon, and you can kind of like figure that shit out as you go. But for this, what I was so impressed by was how seamless the writing and the direction was. And you are a walking billboard for what I think should be the gold standard for how we make feature films, a writer-director. I just feel like even though there's a conspiracy to convince all of us that somehow directing is this unattainable thing as opposed to writing, which we can all kind of do, no.
Yeah.
No, it's not. You're doing it already.
Yeah, there is so many layers of the reasons why I didn't think I would want to direct it that all have to do with not understanding what the job is, and you can learn things to do a job, and that you're not born with information, even though it feels like you are. Like the college I went to, I never had any interest in directing. It was mostly plays where I went, and I had no interest because I was like, well, this kind of guy does that, and that kind of looks this way and talks this way, and I don't want to be in charge like that because I'm not compelled to be him. And it's like, yes. Oh, I have my own way of doing that. And it took a bit of soul searching to realize, oh my God, I'm desperate to direct this. I know how it looks and feels. I need to hire geniuses around me to help me find the words for visual language that, like, it was a lot of, I don't know, but I want to do it. I think I don't know is so awesome.
Best words.
You're allowed to make your first movie. Like, you're allowed to be doing something for the first time because you have to do it. And I really fell in love with also, what was reassuring to me was the process of kind of collecting images and moments and pieces, almost like a little scrapbook of information, was a very enjoyable kind of private process of building a world. And I felt as the work of director unfolded and I discovered what it was as I was doing it, each part of it felt like a miracle. And I was like, at one point in the edit, I was like, thank fucking God I like this. And it's,
yeah.
But I love it and I need it. So thank God, because otherwise, why would you ever, ever put yourself through this deeply intense experience that lasts forever.
It lasts forever, and every day lasts forever, but also is way too short. It's this nightmare of time that is never enough and is yet too much. And I just feel like you've put your finger on something incredibly important, which is we all have a sense, whether we've learned it from school or from culture, of the kind of person a director should be. And a kind of person a director should be is a man, and he is a big, he's Michael Bay. Basically, in my mind, that's what happens.
A big personality.
It's Michael Bay, and I am not Michael Bay. I will never be Michael Bay. I don't have whatever that is. That's not me. Or Ridley Scott. I'm also not that.
Right.
I am an ink-stained wretch, but ink-stained wretches are also wonderful directors, and I love that you overcame the internalized image of what is, because I honestly think that's the thing that hurts us the most is our, we just start with a belief that we're not.
Yeah. You know, trust me, I do have a, now it's a different issue, but that one I overcame enough to get through that. But I'm like, now it's, you know, the first, honestly, if we're going,
please.
Now, because the writing of this film now my experience of it is nostalgia for a time when I now remember it as flow. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was like, and I toiled over that script. It was just, I sent it when I was done with it. But now I'm like, oh yeah, directing, whatever. But like writing, you guys, this needs oil. This is like squeaky or something because it's been so long. And now there's eyes on me.
Yeah.
And I thought the most painful thing was not having...
It's the worst thing.
It's the worst. And then this is also like, yes. And I'm like, okay, now you're trying to kill me by celebrating my film?
How dare you say yes? Yeah.
Well, just be honest, but also be nice.
Yeah.
And I've made a film. Like, there's so much. I only know how to make that film. So it's a mind
fuck. Yes, it is.
Can we rewind and talk about how you learned to make that film? Because that's what's so useful for so many of our listeners is that you have a script and you have people say, like, we agree you should direct this. Now, learn how to direct a film. Like, what did you assign yourself?
Yes.
What did other people send you to look at? What's the process?
You know what? Yes. I would love to talk about. I first off was like, okay, you didn't go to film school, so there's a lot of fraudulence around not knowing things about film. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, lenses is the like, I learned lenses will be good. Encyclopedic, ordering the books from film school, reading the books from film school, research. That was very dry, but I was like, let's just read this. Let's put post-its through it. Quickly realized like, okay, this is simply information that actually I need. Like, it was kind of a process of constantly being like, okay, that fills that need. Now, what is missing still? And then it became, I need to watch a million movies. And I'd been watching movies, which is why I wrote a movie, but I was like, I need to watch films and then as I'm watching them, not fall into watching them, instead watch them.
Yeah, look at them, study them, pull them apart. Yeah, see what they're doing.
Exactly, so I became very into backwards shot listing films. So like a photo of every setup and lining them up and understanding when we return to the same set. It was like very mathematical, like when are we returning to the same setup? How long are we on Laura Dern's face and certain women before we get to his face? Like, why? And I became more aware of my taste. Like, I was like, oh, I like the economy of staying, you know, of not acting until we have to. Like, I became aware of what the film was needing from a visual standpoint. And so I was backward shot listing and would write out the shot list. And obviously, it's not a complete picture because you never know what someone left out, but you get a sense of how cohesive vocabulary is built, you know, in a film. And Certain Women was a really helpful one for me because that is a three part, there was like chapters to that film and they're related. And so how do you make three women who are strangers become related? And then I created a shot list for my film, which instead of shot listing, because that was like felt random, I drew storyboards of like everything. And by the way, I had ample time. Like, man, fill your day with some shit to do because no one is knocking right now. And we were just taking our time and I had to, you know, and so it was drawing everything and every frame of the film. Like, you could go through the storyboard and watch the film, which some of the shots are really what is in the storyboard. And then obviously some very important changes were made in collaboration with my DP, Mia, who, you know, making decisions for good reasons later on. But it was kind of like an instinctual storyboard. Like, what is the first thing that feels right? And then I shadowed my friend Jane Schoenbrunn on I Saw the TV Glow. I was like, oh, I'm ready. Like, I'm not ready, but I'm ready to start being ready.
Yeah.
Like, I'd been on set as an actor, but on set as an actor is like, come in and do you need water? Do you need Diet Coke? And you're good for the day. Like, good job.
Yeah.
I find acting very stressful in moments, especially when you're there for some time, but not the whole time because, you know, it's so vulnerable, but it is a different experience of things are hidden from you to protect you, which I feel complicated about, but whatever. And some things are just not your job to know. And when you're on set, sitting behind a director with nothing to do on the set besides watch that person, you realize how different people advocate for their film.
Yeah.
And the different styles of how people advocate, but also how a film is built moment to moment in very, it's like non-miraculous.
Yes.
It's like by the end of the shoot, you have the pieces to go to the kitchen. Mixing metaphors is okay, I
totally.
Guess. That was my stuff. And then, you know, what you do is you take meetings with different heads of department and through, they made a lookbook. Actually, I'm going to make a lookbook in return. Mm. And then you have a conversation with image and then you become specific. So the cool thing about directing a film is you make decisions every day over time. So the film is built over time. And that was reassuring to me too, because like at first you're alone, but then you know, you bring people in and it's not just yours. And that's a relief really to like, okay, you got that character thing, fucking God, like that's yours. Say it how you want to say it, you know?
Well, I think that what you just said from start to finish is, I'm going to use the word probably because I want to be kind and charitable to film schools. It is probably worth more than 4 years of film school. Mm. What you just laid out there, in part because you just belied the need for film school and you taught yourself what you needed to learn. And I love that. I went through the same thing because I didn't go to film school. And there's like a special technical film school for like directing, which you didn't go to and I didn't go to. But we're smart and we read stuff quickly and learned things quickly. Because like the thing about lenses, I don't need a semester on lenses. Mm. I need like 30 minutes on lenses to get the basic breakdown of it. And then I need to be on set and go, can we try something longer? And the cinematographer's like, yeah, you know what? 50, let's go. And then you're like, oh my God, that's the thing. And you start to get muscle memory. All of these things you laid out, the way you storyboarded, the way you broke things down, reverse
shot listing is so crucial.
That's genius. Like,
so I want to just pause for a second because people may not quite know what we're describing. So
sure.
You're watching a scene in a movie and you can figure out like, okay, well, we are a close-up of her, but there's also a two shot and there seems to be a wider shot. And so you can basically figure out like, what were the actual shots they had on the day to make that thing? And so that was the plan going into it. But then you can also look at how do they actually use it? When do they move into coverage? When do they stay wide? And all the information is right there. You can see it because it's in the film. And that is so, so useful. And so part of this is reminding me of, I don't know, people who watch Drag Race, you know, there's bedroom queens who basically, who do really good drag at home and and they're on Instagram and stuff like that. But there's also, you know, obviously queens need to go out and actually like perform in front of other people. And that to me is the transition from you shot listing at home and then going to a set and seeing Jane direct it on the set for her movie, because you are watching like, oh, this is what it's actually really like. This is what the actual decisions look like in the field, where it's not just, it can't be perfect on Instagram. You're making choices moment by moment. And I'm sure you found this, and Craig, I know you've encountered this. When you are on a set and it's not your movie, you're still watching the monitor and you have so many opinions. It's like, I can't believe we're moving on. Like, there's no way that's going to cut right. That's not what it is. And you recognize, no, but the director knows what they need. And they know like, okay, between these two things, they know what's important.
Sometimes.
Well, Craig's also a showrunner who also does have control of
the
film.
Every now and again, they go, okay, we're moving on. And I go, No, we're not. But
declaring we're moving on is like, well, that's crazy. You can't really go back on moving on. Like, okay, you have to be sure.
My thing on moving on is before I move on, I check with the tent. So who's in the tent? My script supervisor is in the tent and a producer is in the tent. My assistant is in the tent. People who have been watching this, and I'm like, are we feeling okay about this? We're good? Do you think we got it? Yeah, I feel like we got it. Okay, moving on. But you're absolutely right. It's like an abandonment. And it's the worst part of directing is that you have to do more than you have time to do. So you have to move at such speed, but you get better as you go. You are, I assume, a much better director. A week, I don't know how many weeks you shot for. Let's say five, four?
24 days.
Yeah. So 5 weeks. Week five, you were a better director than week one, almost certainly.
Definitely. And you know what? You don't really self-reflect like that, but then Naomi was there the whole time. She was there the first day and she was there like the second to last day. And she was like, bitch, what the hell? Like, she was so proud of me. And I was like, realize like so true. And you know what? There was actually something else I wanted to add, which was a really pivotal part of my building the film 2 years was we did shoot two scenes from the film in a very small, like me and my DP and a group of my DP students at NYU came to shoot in an Airbnb in New York where we both lived, two scenes. And the prompt from my producers was like, who produced it, which was very, and it was like a practice setting. The prompt was two scenes that scare you. And so I did a scene that was like terrifying for me to direct because I didn't understand the mechanics of the movement of the people, like a lot of movement. And then the other one was as an actor, this scene in the bathtub where Agnes tells Liddy what happened. And I, you know, doing that, like...
It's a Sundance Labs thing. That's exactly what you do, yeah.
Exactly. And I think... And then I worked with an editor, Kate Brokaw, who... That was the moment when I was like, oh, like, you cannot cut from a wide to a wide.
Yeah, love this.
And like, oh, man, like... What a masterclass in failure and like a good guy. Like, and I didn't really realize it was a test, but then there was this moment when they were like, what would you have changed about how you shot it? And that was the moment when they were like, okay, yeah, you understand what you would change. And also shadowing a set is very interesting because I shadowed a couple days on Billions, the show that I was on, just to watch those directors and the budget of that shoot is one real particular thing. The vocabulary of the show is very, very heavily covered. Yeah. Like we go over every shoulder, not clean, like we do everything. And then Jane's film was like a particular budget that was like much larger than the budget I was going to have. But to see then a film, like to go backwards, to get a sense of scope and like how much can you get done in a day when you have more days, when you have less days, when you have an actor who it can only be there 3 days, you know, like, Just to get a sense of a few different things, to understand that things on your set will be particular to your set, you know?
Well, I think you did a fantastic job. And it's funny, I was watching through and I was noticing, first of all, I have a particular, it's just taste. It's not that I don't like when people move cameras around. I just don't like it when cameras move around for no fucking reason. I like a camera to be still and I like the people to move around. And I loved how still it was so frequently. And I noted as I was watching how many scenes didn't really seem to need coverage. You kind of had a nice two shot and it worked that way. And that's how the characters were interacting and it was great. And the scene that I was like, there's one that was probably tricky was when Decker and all of his grad students are around a table. Shooting around a table is a nightmare. Yeah. And it's a nightmare that nobody, like, I'd rather shoot a car chase than a scene with that many people around a table.
That makes me feel better because I'm like, how do you fucking shoot a car chase? Would never write that in.
it turns out it's because you can edit the shit out of car chases, you know, but like the eye lines around a table, that's nightmare stuff for me. And you did it really well.
Thank you. There are a few mistakes in the film, continuity issues, and one of them is in that scene. I'll never say what it is. And okay, you just have to live with the fact that happened. I think honestly, like Billions prepared me for that because it was like, and also so much of understanding a scene is like, who is the scene about? Mm-hmm. And his special attention to Agnes. And so it's like, that helps, you know, that helps. Like these boys can be in a two shot, you know, like a three shot. And they will be cut to highlight that this is less vulnerable than it, you know.
Then you got to explain that to them. Sometimes actors don't like that.
No. They're my close friends, so they kind of understand.
It's a tricky one. You're like, no, I actually think that you guys come through better in this.
It's five. So we can see the chemistry between the two of you.
And when I'm in a movie, i.e. one other time besides this, now there's no bullshit of like, I know why my character, like if I'm next to someone who is on set every day and I'm here 3 days, like I get it. Like I'm here to get you here. Yeah. But it's interesting. It's interesting.
Ava, you've perfectly set up a question we have from Anne. She writes, how should writers talk to actors? Specifically, do you tell them about their function within a script or do you just talk about the human being their character is? It's that balance between like, this is the character, this is who you are, the world is that, and functionally, like, this is what I need you to do. This is your job at this scene. What's your instinct there? How you talk to actors?
Depends on the actor. Yeah. Like, I feel like I've now been in enough rooms where people don't know I'm an actor or they forget, and so I hear people talking about actors, be careful. Like, I don't talk about actors like that. Like, I really think what they do is psychotically intense and kind of like next level vulnerable. And when I wrote Sorry Baby, every character I wrote as if I got to play the character. So I was like, you're going to know, like, you're going to say something I like. Like, I want the words to be good because what if I do it? You know, like, and so it was very important to me that every character was, every actor was who they were in the film. Like, every, I, you know, obviously was a part of every casting decision, but I'm like, the world is as important as the people who lead it. And I don't know, talking to actors, you get a sense of how an actor wants to be treated, pick up on energy enough to, you know, like some actors want to be handed off the role, and that I love to do. I love to be like, you're the expert now, like go fly, you know more than me. Often actors who are writers too are like, I get who I am in this. It was interesting because Naomi is completely brilliant and we never rehearsed. Like she really wanted to just do it. And she's so connected. Like, it was a very different process than, like, for instance, Lucas Hedges, who, I mean, is brilliant as well, like equally brilliant. And we rehearsed for weeks beforehand. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing to work with actors who I was learning from who are more seasoned than me. Cause I was like, oh, every actor is, their soul is how they do things. Like, it's great if an actor knows themselves well enough to say, this is how I like to be treated.
Well, let's go back the other way then. So like, you've cast an actor in a role. What is that conversation? Like, if you're the director, how do you have that conversation about, like, let's talk about how you like to work? Like, any tips on how to have that conversation with an actor?
Yeah, I mean, my thing was like always offering up meetings, calls, rehearsals, and going off of what, how they responded to that and what they needed for their process. And my process as an actor was, I worked with Rebecca Dealey, who is an amazing casting director and also an acting coach. And so my process was also about building my character privately. But I think offering everything that anyone could want and then respecting whatever they need.
That's a great way of thinking about it, because I, as much as I understand the impulse here that Anne has, which is, tell me how to talk to actors, or should we give actors this information? They're all different. Big surprise. They're all different. Yeah. And one thing that one actor craves is the thing that another actor will throw an absolute fit over. And learning that is easier for some people. It's probably easier for you, Ava, than it is for me. Like, I'm a little dense. It takes me some time sometimes to realize, oh, this person doesn't need that, and this person does need that. And just because this person needs it doesn't mean that person. So like, it takes me a little bit of time. I'm not instant with it. And I sort of let them know when I start. I'm like, feel free to tell me, hey, this would help, this would not help. And then my attitude is, I'm here to get the best performance out of you. So help me help you. What do you need?
There is, I discovered a lot of value in acting across from your actor, because it's like you're not coming down from on high with a note. And I don't really believe in like the idea of a note. Like, anytime a director has given me a note that feels like, I like the idea more that a director delivers like a secret or like an idea or something to play, like, just that, like, what if she had this thought? And then just, you know, like, and to me, there's kind of an immediate trust that happens if you're in a scene with someone of like, I have to have your back and you have to have my back. And when I'm acting with you, I can't judge your performance. Like, whatever you say. And if I have an idea of what you could do differently, I'm going to give you something different with, which is.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's less like condescending of like, I have an answer. It's more like, what if I said it like this? What happened to you?
Direct them by altering your performance.
But not in secret.
Yeah, no,
not
no, like you let them know. Yeah. But that's that's kind of amazing. And it's funny, I do wish there were like, because I want to be a good boy, you know? And I really more than anything, I don't want actors to feel like, I don't know. I don't want them walking away going, you know, he's just difficult today. I want to do right by them, but sometimes I don't. Sometimes it's It's impossible.
Well, Craig, you're trying to balance, like, you know, you want their performance to be fantastic, and you also have to look at, like, the entire scene and the entire story, everything around it. And, like, that's the challenge, that you're always balancing all these different competing desires.
Yeah. And I'm not acting.
Yeah.
Every day on set, you have to make a calculation of, like, okay, if I give this person this thing, then this is taken from this person. If I go late this day to make sure, I know I have it, but does this actor need to feel like they have it? That will reward me because it's their first day, because this scene is vulnerable or whatever. Like, that calculation of, like, okay, we are going into overtime, and because I haven't done that, I can do that this day. You know, like, constant calculations of, like, what is best for the film. Right. And having to kill your darlings, even of, like, that person will not be happy with me tomorrow, but I won't go late tomorrow. You know, like, it's a busy mind.
Oh, man, is it ever. But it's like, your busy mind has made something absolutely beautiful. I mean, I really do appreciate it. It's such a, I know we have more questions, but this isn't a question. This is for me. It's just a statement. What I love so much about what you did was you made a movie about relationships, and half of the movie, and I'm just guessing, but half of the movie by weight is you alone. And it's still about relationships. It's always, there's always a ghost in the room with you. It's incredible how dialed in you are to the only thing I care about in stories, which is relationships. And so just so well done, just so well done.
Thank you so much. You know, there's so many ghosts that are on the cutting room floor that, like, in the script, I was like, yes, that is my favorite thing in the script, that just once the film starts to become,
it tells you what it wants to be. I was looking through the script yesterday and I noticed, like, oh, these are whole scenes that are in the movie. And basically what you cut were things that, like, broke out of your POV. Like, the script had scenes that did not have you driving the scene. And then, like, those scenes, just they didn't last in the movie. And that's not surprising. And I'm sure they were delightful. I'm sure they're really funny. But the things that were there, they weren't absolutely necessary, and therefore they fall out. So you had a first scene at a sandwich shop. You had two guys talking about paninis. You had an Agnes and Natasha scene. You had two jurors talking. They're all funny and great. And I can totally imagine why they were in the script. And I can completely see why they weren't in the finished movie. And that's also directing.
You know, if you had told me we were cutting those scenes, I would have been like, let's just not fucking shoot it.
But that's, you know, that's the fun part. You don't know.
It's crazy. And it makes me so relieved that we shot more than we needed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know obviously there's sacrifices have to be made when you have more pages, you know, like it everything. But honestly, strategically, those scenes for me, like the way I felt about them in the script were like, I am deliberately giving my audience intermissions energetically and stuff. But then it's like, right, an intermission makes tension fall through the floor. So why would you ever do that? But I was like, I didn't understand that they would change the pace of the film in a way and would be so jarring that whatever kind of like tonal shifting I was trying to do that kept people locked in, there was a jolt that was too jolty and would make no one trust me with the other transitions of tone.
People lose confidence.
Absolutely. Well, I'm really happy that the script you're putting out there shows the scenes in there, because, like, it's such a good lesson for, like, you can see, like, oh, this is the shape of a movie before it films, and that this is the shape of a film afterwards. And you discover things along the way. My question is, how early did you know those scenes were dropping out? Was it after the first assembly? We're like, ugh. Or did it take a while to figure out that those were things that weren't helping you out?
I mean, I went through like the mental intensity of the shooting this film mainly happened in the edit, where I was finally seeing myself on screen and the energy of the film wasn't diluted by, you know, cut. And then you said, you know, like you shoot a piece at a time, but when you watch it, you're like, oh my God, this is like a sad movie. Yeah. And that really, I was surprised somehow that it was a sad movie and I had to watch it. Like it was, and you know, it took a second. Mm-hmm. I really fought for the sandwich scenes. But the second that, for instance, there was like a first scene with John Carroll Lynch and then there's like panic attack scene in the sand. And the second,
it's so
that,
good.
That first scene.
The second scene is so good.
Second scene becomes
important.
Completely different.
Yeah.
And what that scene did in the film was it gave us too much information about Agnes being mentally unwell that it, like, it's math. It's constant calibration, constant, well, yes, what if we try? It's like puzzle making. And you just have to try everything because you are going to get basically questioned by everybody on why each thing. And you have to, you can only choose it if you know what it
You have to be able to justify it. Everything does impact everything. So it's like making a jigsaw puzzle. But when you put one piece down, the colors change on the other pieces. It's a really weird thing to do. And it is hard to say to a great actor, like, oh, by the way, we left one of your... People have left scenes with Meryl Streep on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
You just have to do it sometimes because you find what you needed. And everything was a theory. You know, the fact that your theory worked out like 98% of the time is insane. It's miraculous.
Right. Really wonderful actors, you know, they know that the movie working makes their scenes work. Like, and the Natasha scene that got cut, like when I like told Kelly who plays Natasha, we cut this one scene and she was like, yeah, that makes sense. It was like kind of the same scene as a scene before. I was like, but I was just like, oh yeah, people get it. People understand that like what that does for something else is more. John is able to be proud of the film because of how his character experienced as like a breath of fresh air, completely new energy, 75% of the way through the film. Like there's real power in that. So yeah, it's nice when actors get why. But I wish every script that you could read was a shooting script. Like, my God, would that be... That is the one cool thing about when you get to know people. There's a lot of cool things about getting to know people who do this, but one of them is like you can make them send you shooting scripts instead of
the sanitized. Yeah,
I'm just like, this is like a key to the kingdom of like, which I feel like should be more possible.
I agree with you, and it is. It's also comforting to see how a great movie had a shooting script that was 90% correct.
Yes.
So, you know.
Yes.
So I think we've actually achieved our goal and our thesis, which is basically that it's not brilliance. It's actually mostly just hard work and you can't sort of distinguish and differentiate between the two of them. And like this conversation about like, oh no, it was just really hard work. And yes, inspiration and, you know, incredibly talented people, but also hard work and constant questioning of, wait, am I actually doing this right? And so, Ava, thank you so much for this education.
I have a question for you guys. You have both had like psychotically successful things.
Yeah.
I am curious about your return to the page. And maybe this isn't your experience, but I am
scared.
Predicting that, well, beyond scared, No, just I think reconciling with the fact that each process is humblingly different than another process and work in a new way that you have to relearn, but coming off of attention.
Attention is the poison. So you can't. In my experience, when attention is as focused and relentless as it is on something like you and your movie during award season, it is poison in your veins. It's a beautiful thing, of course. It's a sign that people connected and loved what you did. But attention causes pain and you need to be alone to write. I really believe that. I don't think you can write in a room with glass windows and everybody staring at you. You need a little time.
Yeah.
You need a little time to flush it out. I call it going down the well. That's what Bella Ramsey and I call it, going down the well. You're going to go down the well and you're going to be at the bottom of a well for a bit. And people are going to wonder, why are you at the bottom of a well? You should be on top of the world. And you're like, I'm crying a lot. And they don't understand, but that's okay. And then the attention, this is the best part.
Goes away.
I mean, oh my God. You think it won't because they just can't take their eyes off of you. And then it's gone. And then you're like, oh, thank God. And then of course, later, you're like, oh no, it's going to come back. And that's a different dread, but... My advice is give yourself a little bit of time.
Yeah, you know, thank you for saying that. And as you're saying that, you know, there was this journey. I was like making these videos. It was like daily attention on the videos, and like the turnaround was so psychotic. DMs from people that would break my mind. And what had to happen was I stopped. I had to like cold turkey run away for a few years and decide like, who am I? What is going on? What do I want to write? What do I care about? And it's like, oh my God, like without, like I totally did that. And I needed so much silence. And hearing you say that, I'm like, oh shit, like I actually know about that. And that's amazing. Yeah. But you know, it's a different thing, but it is this crazy.
Yeah.
I would also say that I suspect your curiosity will overcome your fear at a certain point, because your curiosity is, I'm sure, driving you through a lot of things. There's things you want to explore and do. And just the same way you were intentional about thinking about how you want to direct, you're going to be intentional about thinking about, like, what do I want to do now? What is interesting to me? What is a thing I want to tackle? And you'll find a clever way to do it. And it could be a new original story, or it could be an adaptation of something that you're always like, oh, I know how to do this thing. Why does this thing not exist in the world? And then you'll make that thing, and it's going to be awesome.
Isn't that crazy? Thank you so much. You guys are so nice. Like, always time with everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really annoying. It's annoying.
Yeah.
And we have no problem accepting that for our physical selves. No problem at all. You cut yourself as a kid, it hurts, and then it scabs up, and then scab is itchy, and then it goes away, and then it's sort of pink and weird, and then it's okay, and then it's like it never happened, and it's just time. And we are so frustrated that our emotional pain takes time. And, you know, that's what Dennis Palumbo, who's a therapist that I went to for many years, and he came on our show and talked on our show, he would often say to me, I would say, like, when does this stop? And he would say, tincture of time. I'm like, shit. But also good. Tincture of time. Yeah. So a little bit of time. You're going to be fine. You're going to be more than fine. You're going to be great. Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's do our one cool things. I have a book that I'm reading that I really love that I want people to read. It's called Girl on Girl, How Pop Culture Turned a Generation of Women Against Themselves. It's by Sophie Gilbert. It's really good. I think you'd both like this a lot. And it goes back to some earlier times and sort of the cycles of sort of like feminism, post-feminism, and to sort of this churn that kind of happens. Women, especially young women, sort of get co-opted into this system of beliefs, and any attempt to form an identity for themselves gets sort of marketed back towards them. It's really smartly done. Here's from her opening chapter, which is sort of her thesis. She says she wanted to understand how a generation of young women came to believe that sex was our currency, our objectification was empowering, and that we were a joke. Why were we so easily persuaded of our own inadequacy? Who was setting the agenda? And I just loved her framing on all this, because it is just does feel like you have girl power, and then it becomes like a thing that is sold back to women that they can buy and purchase. And so it's about culture, it's about capitalism. It's also really about porn, which I hadn't thought so much about, but the degree to which porn is always on the edges of culture and warping things in a weird way. So I thought it was just a great book. So Sophie Gilbert's Girl on Girl. It's a book out from last year, but I'm just now reading it.
That is amazing.
Craig, what do you got?
My one cool thing is the Vancouver SkyTrain. I love riding a train, but like I'm a New York boy. I love the subway there, and the subway goes pretty much everywhere, and I love it. And Vancouver is not New York. It's much, much, much smaller city, and it doesn't have a subway. It's got this like little, you know, kind of monorail thing. And I mean, I just never took it. I never got on it. I was just like, oh, it's a train. But the studio complex where we are based and where all of our stages are is just walking. It's like a 2-minute walk from a SkyTrain station. And I was like, should I take a train? I am so obsessed with riding the SkyTrain. It is so much better than driving. It's so much better. It is my mood. Driving to work, I get in my car and I'm already angry that I'm driving. And then my blood pressure and rage accelerate so that when I finally arrive at work, I am already just at a 9 of pissed. And then I have to go to meetings. And the SkyTrain is like,
And it's clean. There's like a train that comes every 3 minutes.
Ooh.
So in the subway in New York, you're like, oh, I just missed it. It's going to be 12, which is really 15, or there's a stoppage. This thing never stops. 3 minutes, just pew, 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 and it's lovely. So, I mean, I'm not saying anything that a lot of Vancouverites don't know, but if you do live in Vancouver and you haven't taken the SkyTrain, you're wondering, fantastic way to get around.
Love it.
They're going to be so happy you
said that. I should get money.
Yeah, absolutely. Ava Victor, do you have something to recommend to our listeners?
Yes. Well, I was going to do this mini Nutella that I got in Spain today.
Oh, mini Nutella.
Instead of that, I have decided to shift my one, so this is me sneaking in two things. There is a website called rainymood.com. Mm. And if you go to rainymood.com, you can listen to rain sounds and it can be a tab open on your computer while you do other things. And I find it incredibly relaxing. You can also listen to music while you listen to rainy sounds, which I think is really beautiful. So rain has always been a comfort to me, and consider
this
checking it out.
Is the website has rain. Mm-hmm. It's like you're looking through a window that has rain coming down. It's a beautiful website. Like, this is really nice. I mean, the SkyTrain kind of is its own vibe, which, like... Also, it's Vancouver. It's always a rainy mood. Like, this is shocking right now. Like, what's going on behind me? The fact that it's not raining. But I do, when I go to sleep, my iPad is doing white noise, but it's like technically brown noise.
Yeah.
Because I'm a baby still. I'm just an old baby.
Mm-hmm. the older
I get, the closer I return to looking like an actual baby. soon the diapers will come. But this actually seems like something that might be nice for when I'm writing, because I don't like specific noises, but rain is comforting like that. Yeah. This is lovely.
Love it.
Yeah. No words.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Great. Awesome. Thank you so much. That is our show for this week. Scriptus is produced by Drew Marquardt and edited by Matthew Schilelli.
I don't believe it.
Our outro this week is by Nick Moore. If you have an outro, you can send us a link to ask@johnaugust.com. That is also the place where you can send questions like the ones we answered today. You'll find transcripts at johnaugust.com, along with our sign up for a weekly newsletter called Interesting, which has lots of links to things about writing. The Script Notes book is available wherever you buy books. Ava Victor has hers with her in Spain. You'll find us on Instagram at Script Notes Podcast. You'll find clips and other helpful video on our YouTube. Just search for Script Notes and give us a follow. We have t-shirts and hoodies and drinkware. You'll find us at Cotton Bureau. You'll find the show notes with links to all the things we talked about today in the email you get each week as a premium subscriber. Thank you to all our premium subscribers. You make it possible for us to do this each and every week. You can sign. Ava Victor is a premium subscriber.
We've been siphoning $5 a month out of her pocket for a long time.
I mean, $5 is a fucking steal. You guys are seriously doing more than $5 a month, but
thank
I love
you.
It.
Well,
so, thank you so much.
Maybe just Venmo then?
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
You're like a big filmmaker now? I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
absolutely. You can sign up to become a premium member at scriptnotes.net, where you get all those back episodes and bonus segments like the one we're about to record on short-form video versus directing feature films. Ava Victor, congratulations on your directing of your feature film, your writing of it, your starring in it, your all the attention for it, which is wonderful, but will also pass and then allow you to do the thing after that next.
Phew.
It was so great having you on the show. Yeah. We tried for a while, and I'm so glad it finally happened.
I am so happy. This is such a milestone for me in a way that's beyond. So thank you.
Thank you, Ava.